This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary, but the good news is if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you may qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two. Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins. We now bring on Chris Harrington. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Strutting with Some Barbecue by Louis Armstrong, born on this day in 1901. Maybe the greatest American musician, maybe just the greatest American artist. Biffy and Lil Hardin, his wife, on piano there.
You know, I have developed a habit of listening to this particular type of music while I work at the house. It's become one of the great joys in life is getting up, putting on a YouTube backdrop with some jazz music or a YouTube playlist with some jazz music and that sort, and drinking my coffee and doing what I need to do to get ready for the day. So I like the choice today. One thing, Chris, I should say, you always are very good at putting me in my place when it comes to being uneducated about all things arts and culture.
Okay.
Because I'm very simple. And I have to start off today's segment with an extremely dumb question that you're probably going to make fun of me for. But I was reading your Q&A mailbag. That's the word I'm searching for here. Your mailbag that you did in the Daily Memphian last week. I was reading it, and I got to the section where there's more to life than basketball, which is always one of my favorite sections. And you were being asked about movies, and you were answering questions about movies. And you talked about the new movies that have come out this summer, and we can get into that. But I was interested in the new to you section because
right.
In the section, you listed movies that you have recently watched but you had not seen yet. And I somewhat take these as suggestions, and I need to know, for someone that's not like a big movie guy, that's 30-something, what the appeal is of watching a movie from the 1940s.
I mean, what's the appeal of reading a book or listening to jazz in the morning that's not from this year?
Well,
right?
I know, but my point is this like a black and white movie? Does it feel like the same experience as watching a modern movie? I don't think I've ever seen a movie from the 1940s.
One of the best decades ever for American movies. I mean, movies mattered back then. It's kind of like baseball and horse racing, right? It was actually more important then than now, and you can sometimes feel that energy in the product. To me, the idea that black and white is a hurdle just doesn't really, like, I don't really process that. Like, it seems odd to me. I get that people think that way. It's maybe more so sometimes we have such a fixation on like hyper realism now, sometimes in movies, like well, that wouldn't have really happened. They wouldn't really talk that way. And like, that just wasn't like a thing in like, you know, comedies in the 1940s or 50s or whatever. So people sometimes get hung up on that. I don't know. I just think that, I don't like, art that is like, whether it's books or movies or music or whatever, things that are created in mediums that like last, it's not like a live thing. I mean, the fact that they last is like part of the point. And so, I don't know, I'm for like finding the good stuff wherever you find it. In a lot of cases, particularly with movies, like, you know, the 40s and 50s were like really great decades for American movies.
So, so let me ask you about this particular movie that I was like kind of shocked. Intruder in the Dust. What is this? What is this about? Why should I watch it?
I mean, if you're in the Memphis area, it's interesting to watch it because of the sort of the local regional ties. Honestly, it was not a popular commercial movie necessarily today. It was sort of a under the radar movie, lower budget thing. There are no stars in it, partly because of what it's about and how it's about it. But it's actually an adaptation of a Faulkner novel, and it was actually filmed on location in Oxford. Like, a lot of it's filmed on the Oxford Town Square, which I think would be interesting to anyone who has spent time in Oxford, you know, to see that location on screen. And, it, you know, it's a movie that came out, I don't know, maybe 15 years before To Kill a Mockingbird, before even To Kill a Mockingbird was written. And I actually think it's a lot more perceptive and more interesting movie about race and racism in the American South of that era than To Kill a Mockingbird is. So I think there aren't a lot of movies like that that were made in that moment that take that subject seriously and were shot like in the South. Like, it's really sort of a one-off in that regard. So a really interesting historical document, if nothing else.
So you mentioned Sinners as the best movie new release movie that you've seen so far this year. I actually went and saw that too. We both saw that while we were in OKC on the day off. Have you liked any of the other new releases that have come out? I know there's been a few different superhero movies, Marvel, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I like the Fantastic Four movie more than most Marvel movies. And I think I actually like it a little bit better than whatever the consensus is from among people, you know, the comic book movie fans. I think that's one of the better Marvel movies to me, one of the more interesting ones. I thought the Superman movie was good. I was not as into F1 as other people were for various reasons. I felt like I was watching an infomercial half the time. My son and I are going to go see The Naked Gun probably this afternoon. I've heard good things about that, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I've seen some good praise for The Naked. I haven't seen the first one, so I guess that's my first step, is going and seeing the first one. But I don't think
that's really necessary. And one of the things I noted, I haven't seen it yet, but just from the trailer and everything else, one of the things I noted about it is that, if anything, Liam Neeson is spoofing himself as much as he's trying to recreate the old Naked Gun movies, because he's been playing like, you know, the tough guy for 15 years now since Taken. And it seems almost like as much a spoof of Liam Neeson movies as a remake of The Naked Gun in some ways.
What do you make of like the conversation around, because another part of the mailbag, you talked about remakes of movies and remakes that were better or to the level of the first, because Happy Gilmore obviously is the second iteration of that is now out on Netflix and a lot of people watched it. And I just find it to be so...
The actual question I got, sorry to interrupt, but the question I got, which I thought was perceptive, was strictly about remakes and reboots of comedy, which tends to be less successful, I think, probably because, like, you know the joke already, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. So I find it interesting that, like, it seems like the online discourse, and online discourse does not represent, we'll say this a million times, overall opinion, but the online discourse for like Happy Gilmore seemed to be all or nothing. People either really liked it or they said it was the worst movie ever. It's interesting the way that people sort of, it's like we have first take brain where everybody has to say, go to one of the far extremes.
I am not an Adam, like I like Adam Sandler, excuse me, in like non-traditional Adam Sandler movies, but like the quote unquote Adam Sandler movie, I'm just slightly too old to have cared about that, and I think I may be allergic to it. So I've never seen the first Happy Gilmore, so I'm not going to watch the second. But it's the kind of thing that, from a distance, seems to me very fan servicey. Like, its whole point is to like appeal in a nostalgic way to the people who love the first Happy Gilmore movie. I'm sort of generally skeptical of made for Netflix movies anyway.
Okay. Two more things, non-Grizzlies, before we talk about that. One, it appears we're getting In-N-Out in Memphis on Poplar, in East Memphis. Have you had it? What are your thoughts?
So I've only had In-N-Out once, and it was in Dallas, not in California. And it was one time several years ago, and so my memory is sketchy, but I do not remember being super impressed by it. I thought the burger maybe at Five Guys was better, not necessarily the fries. I think Shake Shack, which they don't have in Memphis, you know, those are the three sort of national burger chains that are considered sort of a higher level than your typical fast food. And I think they're all fine, but like, I don't know. I just didn't get a Topps Burgers, any of them.
Yeah. Did you get it? Do you remember, did you get it like animal style or whatever? I'm not an expert on it.
You gotta remind me what that means.
It's got like some sort of sauce that's like closer to like a Thousand Island sauce and chopped chilies. George, I don't know if you've ever had In-N-Out. Never.
Yeah, the special sauce that's always just like, you know, ketchup and mayo.
Yeah, pretty much.
Together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's the only way to really judge. Yeah, that's probably the only way to truly judge it. I'm sure there are people out there that are like huge In-N-Out fans that are ecstatic that this is coming to Memphis. I usually do In-N-Out once a year, and that's in Vegas at Summer League, and I do it the way that my California friends tell me to order it, which is the animal style with the sauce and all that stuff. I was just curious.
So what is your take? Since you've had it more recently than I have, what is your take on those hamburger chains and what's actually better?
I think it's fine, and I think if you're going to get the fries with the animal style sauce on it and the cheese and all that, then it's a unique enough flavor. It's a unique enough thing where I don't feel like I'm getting it at other places. So I would, in an instant, maybe feel like eating it and then go get it. As far as just like your standard burger, I'm kind of with you. I don't think it really differentiates. I think I'd rather go to Tops or go to Five Guys. Like, we go to Tops all the time because it's right near our office.
Right.
And I enjoy a Tops cheeseburger as much as anybody else. So I don't see a huge difference in terms of quality of hamburger. But I'm also somebody that's not above just McDonald's, right, on a road trip or whatever. Like, I do enough traveling that, you know, I end up eating a lot of really crappy food, which is really terrible for me. Yeah, I like a McDonald's cheeseburger, so I guess I'm not that picky.
My guess with In-N-Out is it'll be like most things. Not all things, because there's still a line down the block at every Chick-fil-A in Memphis. But most things that come are like a big deal for 3 months, and then it settles down, and then people, you know, whatever. Like Whataburger. People were excited that Whataburger finally came to Memphis, and now, like, it's, you know, whatever. There's Whataburger here.
Speaking of, I went to Dutch Bros Coffee in Collierville, which just opened last week. Chaos. I mean, chaos. The line was down the street to get Dutch Bros coffee. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good coffee, and I would go back. But I don't want to wait in a line that long. Like, I'd rather go to Starbucks. I mean, if I'm going to wait 25 minutes in a drive-thru, I probably wouldn't do that again. But I thought it was good.
People love to try the new stuff, and I like trying new stuff too, but not as much as I like not standing in line. And so, like, I remember when Hard Times Deli opened there in the Edge District, like, it took me 3 tries to actually eat there, because the first 2 times I drove by and saw people standing outside, I said, nope, I'll try this some other day.
Yeah, no, I've tried that too, and I did go wait in the line for that too, but I've now seen that they have breakfast sandwiches, and I am a big breakfast sandwich guy. They used to have a breakfast sandwich. I don't know if it's on the menu anymore. At Comeback Coffee. That I love, that I used to go to all the time, and now I don't see it anymore.
This is all the same guy. Hard Times is co-owned by this guy, Cole Jeans, who has the restaurant Kinfolk down in Harbortown. And I gather that he's had some building issues there at Kinfolk, and so he's doing breakfast sandwiches. I gather from a distance, just from my social media, that he's doing breakfast sandwiches at Hard Times now, partly because of the problems at Kinfolk. But that was the same guy who did the breakfast sandwiches at Comeback Coffee back in the day.
What's funny is I met those guys at the Overton Park 99, where they were playing 99 holes to raise money for youth golf in the city. And had I known that, I would have blitzed him. I would have said, we need that breakfast sandwich back at Comeback Coffee. But I did not know.
I don't know the other two guys in Hard Times, but I've written about Cole because I've written about Kimple. He's a great guy, super talented. chef restaurant guy in Memphis. So I hope whatever he's dealing with the building issues at Ken Folk gets sorted out. So if you're listening, shout out to you, Cole.
Okay. Last non-Grizzlies thing before we move on to that. Jody Callahan wrote a story in the Daily Memphian, which I thought was a pretty good story on John Larkin, who was a man who helped save Overton Park Shell from becoming a parking lot in the 80s. It's a really great story. You should go read it over at the Daily Memphian. I astoundingly, as somebody, like, I go see live music a decent amount. I have not been to the Shell. And I was just curious what the, for a show, what's the best show you've seen at the Shell?
The best show I've seen at the Shell, this band from Dallas, the old 97s, actually played a show, and it wasn't like, it was probably the best, like maybe the quote unquote biggest band that's played there that wasn't a ticketed event, maybe. For some reason, they played a free show that was just part of the series, and I really liked that band anyway. But the show was great, and at the end, they let all the little kids who were there just come up on stage and dance with them while they played the last song. That's probably the best show I've seen at the Shell. But we used to go to the Shell a lot, because I lived in the area. Not quite walking distance if you're carrying your coolers in your chairs, but like pretty close. And so when our kids were younger, we used to go to the Shell all the time. Now, I haven't been in several years at this point, but we used to be regulars at the Shell shows.
In terms of, like, iconic spots in Memphis, where does the Shell rank? It's amazing that it's survived so many efforts to get rid of it at this point.
It's known as the place. There's sort of two things that tie it to sort of Memphis music history. One is it's sort of known as the place where Elvis played his first concert. It's not actually the place where he performed in public for the first time. But the other place was like a smaller club. I think it's called the Bel Air Club, which doesn't actually exist anymore. So, but the first like real quote unquote concert that was a bigger thing that he did was as the opening act for a show at the Shell. So it's sort of rightly thought it's like Elvis's first concert stage. And that was in the mid-50s. And then in the late 60s, early 70s, it was the home for this annual thing called Memphis Blues Festival or Memphis Country Blues Festival. That was sort of in the era where a lot of the hippie rock fans were rediscovering the old blues acts and they were sort of coming together. There's a documentary about those blues festivals that came out a couple of years ago. But I think those are the two things that sort of most tie the Shell into Memphis music, Memphis cultural history.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. We have Stax right there, Sun Studios, the Shell. The music history here is definitely super rich, and the Shell's a big part of it, which is why I was just surprised to see that so many different times they essentially tried to get rid of it, which was pretty shocking to me.
Well, the big story with Overton Park, there's a PBS series that came out maybe 7-8 years ago called, 10 Parks That Changed America. And Overton Park was one of the 10 they profiled. And the reason Overton Park was profiled is because there was an attempt, maybe it's probably Jerry's story, but maybe it was in the 60s, maybe it was in the 70s. I can't remember when it was, before my time. But there was an attempt to bring the highway, the interstate, straight through Overton Park. And that was going to happen. And citizens groups stepped up to stop it. And that's sort of why Sam Cooper ends right there at the park. And that was considered sort of a landmark moment and sort of preserving urban park space and stopping, the interstate going right through the middle of the park.
Okay. On to the Grizzlies. For last year, and then I'm going to be doing it again this year, I've written the preview for Athlon Magazine's NBA edition.
I filed my preview for Lindy's Magazine preview edition yesterday.
Lovely. So there we go. We will be represented in the magazine scene.
We'll be battling it out on the newsstands in a couple months.
Well, what's funny is for this magazine, they asked me, that they give you a list of things and topics that they, hope for you to hit on. And one of them is position battles. And I've kind of been thinking like, in terms of position battles, I'm not quite sure if there's any clear cut, like it might be this person or this person for the Grizzlies, maybe at the two guard or the wing with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Jalen Wells and that group. But do you see what, if I asked you, what do you make of the position battles for the Grizzlies going into next season? What would be your immediate thoughts?
I mean, I think it's probably more interesting in terms of rotation spots or rotation minutes than it is for, let's say, starting lineup spots. But I think there are at least a couple things in the starting lineup, because the only absolute dead certainties are like John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., and that's assuming Jaren is ready for opening night, which he may or may not be. But clearly, whenever he's ready, he's the starting power forward or starting one of the starting bigs. And so in terms of the wing in the center spot, if he's going to miss the start of the season, which seems nearly certain, if not official, like there's a real question of what you do there. I think they're thinking right now is that Jock Landale is probably like a fill-in starter until Edie gets back, even if he's not playing heavy minutes. It may be a starter that plays less than 20 minutes a game, but I think that's probably what will happen. But I guess that's not certain. And on the wing, I don't know where you are, but I feel like there is a default. And the default is Kentavious Caldwell Pope and Jalen Wells. So I think that's going to be the starting wing combo unless something happens to change that. Obviously, injuries can change everything.
I mean, do you think Vince Williams can change that? You are number one in the Vince Williams fan club. Do we think Vince Williams can change that?
Or could Cedric Howard change that, right? Yes. That's the real, to use a term that John Hollinger throws out all the time uncomfortably, that's the real mystery meat in the meal here is Cedric Howard. I'm sort of past the point of predicting like Vince Williams is going to start. I just hope he gets an opportunity, you know, to play and doesn't sort of get shut out because of the depth and the changes and the coaching change and all that. I will say, I think there's an interesting question in terms of usage. It may be in a starting lineup where John Morant and Jaren Jackson are both on the floor. It's fine if the other three players like can't do anything with the ball. But Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a low-usage guy. And Jalen Wells is a low-usage guy. And if they start Jock Landale, he's a very low-usage guy, right? So do you find yourself starved for a third player who can, like, do something with the ball? And I think they got options there. I think, you know, Ty Jerome can do something with the ball. Scottie Pippen can do something with the ball. In theory, we'll find out Cedric Howard can, but I think Bitz can too. He can handle the ball and make plays with the ball. So I think, you know, they have so many lower usage guys who seem certain to have roles. I think they may find themselves starved for more ball handling. But I don't know whether that impacts the starting lineup or just sort of the rotation, you know.
Is there any world in which Jerome, Morant, and Pippen can play on the court at the same time?
Yeah, I don't think you'll see that as the regular. I don't think you'll see that pop up every night in the rotation. But I think I think at the end of the season, when you search that three-man combo, it won't come up empty. And, you know, I just think there's such a tendency to go small in the NBA. There'll be moments where that happens, but I don't think that'll happen very often. But I do think I think Jerome and Pippen are going to play together a bunch. But I think Morant and Jerome and Morant or Morant and Pippen, you're going to see one or the other of those pretty frequently, I think, just to get your best players on the floor.
Scottie Pippen Jr. held his camp at the end of last week and at Memphis Sports and Event Center. And I took a few minutes to go over there and I talked to him. And one of the things that was discussed was Ty Jerome. And it seemed very clear, like, he thought that this was like a really exciting prospect for him and Ja to be able to play next to him, especially I think with Scottie being able to be off the ball and what they ask him to do defensively. So I think you're right. I think we could potentially see that combination a few times over the course of the season, especially early too, when they don't have bodies. And like you said, they're going to need people with a scoring punch. And like one thing that Scottie showed throughout the playoffs was he can go get his own bucket. And I think that that's pretty important for this team.
The Scottie Pippen thing in the wake of the Ty Jerome signing is interesting to me because on one hand, I think the Grizzlies see that as a combination that would be really good together. And I agree with the idea that like, Jerome is more the on-ball player on offense, but then Pippen can be the on-ball player on defense, and so that he can really fit there. I agree with that, but I wonder in terms of total minutes, total touches, that kind of thing, because I really thought I was prepared to do the Scottie Pippen as a sleeper sixth man of the year pick, and then the Grizzlies went out and signed a guy who just finished third and sixth man of the year, you know, so I just sort of don't know how to think about that in terms of role. Because, like, another question, and, like, we got months to do this, we don't have to do it now, but, like, who's going to be the third leading scorer on this team? That's wide open.
I think there's a chance it could be Scottie, depending on how much he plays.
Yeah. this is what I'm saying. Yeah. This is the dude who scored 58 points across the last two games they played in the playoffs.
And I think, again, Cedric Coward is the mystery meat of the meal in that equation as well, too, depending on how well he shoots the ball and what sort of usage he gets in the offense. I think that, yeah, that's the other one. The other thing I found interesting before we get you out of here on Scotty was he got asked about what he's doing to improve his game this offseason. And typically when players talk about that, you get a lot of like everything. I'm working on my all around game, and it's almost always a nothing answer. I found it great that Scotty decided to give a specific answer to the question and essentially said, you know, last year, and you tell me if you feel like this is the case too, it felt like I was pretty good from three and I was pretty good at getting all the way to the basket, but there were times I would drive and I would get into the middle of the lane and I would just, I would get stuck or it was uncomfortable. And for me, he's like, the one area where I think I really need to get better to improve offensively is in the in-between area of the three-point line and all the way at the rim, because, you know, that's when I was turning the ball over the most. That's when I, you know, I wasn't the most efficient with the floaters, that sort of thing. And so he spent a ton of his offseason working on sort of the in-between between the three and all the way at the rim. What do you make of that answer? And do you think that to me, it made sense after he said it, but I didn't really think about that over the course of the season. I just thought he was an attacker.
Well, when you first started with that sort of, you know, mid-range, not even mid-range, but sort of in-between game answer, I was going to tie it into the turnover issue. And then, you know, you got to that, or he got to that. And to me, broadly speaking, the turnover issue is the biggest issue with him. But it could be that does exacerbate the turnover problem. That sort of uncertainty, both as a scorer and a passer, and deciding whether you're a scorer or a passer, like all of that together, because that is a sort of a, more of a decision-making part of the floor, right? So if you catch the ball from three and you're a three-point shooter and you're open, you're going to take the shot. If you get all the way to the rim, like, you may end up dishing it off, but, like, you know, that's a more decisive kind of thing. That middle of the floor, like, do I hit the floater? Do I hit a pocket pass? Do I kick it to a three-point shooter? There's a lot of decision-making that has to happen in that moment with a much wider sort of range of decisions. And I do think just the general playmaker, ball control, don't turn it over, all that kind of stuff is where he needs to improve. And maybe that hyper-specifically is where the greatest improvement can come. It's probably a pretty good answer.
Yeah. I mean, if you just think about it this way, you know, if you're shooting floaters more often, he'll turn the ball over a lot less over the course of the season. Cause a shot isn't a turnover, right? So if he's comfortable enough to take those floaters in the lane, that's one way to immediately limit the number of turnovers, because you're eliminating the chance for a turnover if you're shooting the ball. So,
The Grizzlies are about to be team floater again, because I actually looked at this the other day, and in terms of like percentage, you know, cleaning the glass.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
The percent, like the frequency of attempts at certain spots of the floor, and they do it right out of position. Jared Jackson Jr. is 100th percentile in like that short mid range, which is the floater territory among bigs. Ty Jerome is like super, super high percentage on that.
No one took more.
So is John Morant, and so is Brandon Clark.
No one took more than Ty Jerome last year in those floaters. So
Scottie Pippen starts taking floaters. It's basically that. It's just going to be all floaters all the time for the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, it'll feel like a Tyus Jones throwback when it used to be Tyus and Ja taking all those floaters. All right, Chris. Well, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right. Thanks.
I'm glad Chris is always able to bring me back. Have you ever seen a 1940s movie, George? How old are you, George?
Can I ask? You can. I am 26.
You were 26.
I have watched, I took a film class or two, so I've watched some even older movies.
Would you watch a 1940s movie just on your own now?
If it was recommended to you. If it was recommended to me, I'd have to at least think about it. I'm not a big movie or TV guy anyway.
Yeah. No, I'm not a big movie guy. I found that interesting.
Definitely more of a music person. Like, every time I'm doing this.
I'll listen to 1940s music.
Oh, yeah. I was like, every time I'm doing this, I'm looking forward to what Chris sends me for his song of the day, because I'm like, okay, this might be some heat.
Yeah. No.
He has sent us some fire before.
Yeah. So. No. His playlists are vast. I got a good taste of that on the road trip to OKC for the playoffs. We spent a lot of time listening. I can tell you exactly what Chris listens to. He's got his playlists already set. And then he listens to a ton of basketball podcasts. So we listen to a lot of the different basketball podcasts.
A lot of
podcasts.
Bill Simmons.
Yeah. But no, I just can't, like, I just don't think I could make myself do that as much, like, cause the experience of listening to music is one thing.
Yeah.
And then it to me, it doesn't differ.
There's
no noticeable true differences. It's sound is sound. To me, maybe I sound like an idiot right now talking about this. In fact, I probably do. But a 1940s movie, you'll clearly notice the differences in technology and that sort of
and
thing.
And acting and style.
Maybe I'll give it a try. I'll watch the movie and I'll report back. Probably not this week, but I got a lot going on. But I'll report back once I've watched some 1940s film. All right, when we come back, we've got some Grizzlies news that came out over the weekend, uniform news, which we can talk about, and another trip around the NFL. This is Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is, if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. And one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Welcome back. Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN. I don't know if this is news, George, but it did circulate on the internet. This is something Chris and I mentioned last week on our podcast. It is the, I think, 25th anniversary of the Grizzlies being in Memphis this season. So, you know what that means. throwback uniforms.
Jersey time.
Okay. Yeah. And so it has circulated quite a bit, so I feel pretty comfortable talking about it. I don't think these things really stay secrets for very long, but I'm fairly confident that the reporting out there is accurate. We're going to get the black Memphis throwback uniforms from the Grizzlies this season, which obviously a lot of people are really excited about. You know, they wore these.
They're pretty fresh.
For the last.
They're really good.
Yeah. They wore these for the last anniversary season, not the Vancouver one. So every anniversary season, they break out the different throwbacks. Last year, we had the Vancouvers. They at one point wore the teal Vancouvers, and they've already worn the black Memphis.
Yeah, they wore that, what was it, a handful of years ago?
Yeah.
Was it 2021?
It was the season after the bubble? Yeah, the season after the bubble.
21, I think that was.
Yes. So you might have expected maybe we would get the white Memphis throwback uniforms from the early days at the Pyramid. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to go run back the black this year because mm-hmm. if you've also followed all the other uniform leaks that have happened across the league, and these things just they can't stay a secret because there's too much that has to go into creation, production, distribution, yeah. and that they just leak out. It's just part of the nature of this. Those uniforms, the City Edition uniforms, appear to be white. So they're not going to have three different white versions of uniforms. So I would expect that all that reporting is accurate, and we are going to get Grizzlies throwbacks. What's the best Grizzlies throwback? Which one?
Ooh, I am partial to the Vancouver ones with the full grizzly bear. I think most, if not all, like 90s jerseys or uniforms just have a little something to them. I mean, we even talk about, think about it, the Mountaintops with the Utah Jazz. Those are phenomenal.
Yes.
The Raptor.
Elite.
Toronto Raptors.
Elite.
Come on.
Elite. Yeah. No, I think my favorite is these black Memphis uniforms.
I thought of another one, which, like, they got kind of mixed reviews, I think, but from last season, the Memphis Sounds ones, I really liked them. I love that color scheme.
Yeah. The
red with like the Carolina blue.
Those were very clean, but maybe I'm a traditionalist in this way. I think I prefer the uniforms that stick to the traditional or current color scheme of the team.
Sure. No, I get that totally. 100%.
And I understand that this is a throwback to the Memphis Sounds, but that was an entirely different league, entirely different era, not the same franchise.
Yeah.
So my point is that I think if they stick to the teal and red, there's enough like Grizzlies gear out there to where like the teal and red to me appeals more than the red and the baby blue and the gold. But I think that these Memphis, there's not a ton to them. They're very clean.
Simple.
They're very clean. Simple. That's what I'm a fan of.
It's a good look.
So I'm excited at the idea of the Grizzlies bringing those back this year, and I think they look awesome on jerseys, and they'll look great in the team store, and people will go buy them for sure. I imagine, those Zach Edey, Cedric Coward throwbacks are going to be pretty popular because I think everybody by now, they've got their Ja and their Jaren. I think that those two are probably likely to be flying off the shelves this year. The other thing I wanted to talk about before we get out of here today, Tim Buckley, my colleague at the Daily Memphian, wrote a piece with Tom Pernetti, AAC commissioner, or American commissioner.
Come on now. Respect sore.
Talking about the transfer portal, in which he essentially says, all right, I'm going to say it. I'm going to come out here and be the bold one to say it. The transfer portal sucks. No, he didn't. That's not word for word. That's paraphrasing. But the transfer portal sucks. And in the piece, he talked about how Army last year was set to play in a bowl game against Marshall. So they had conference champion against a conference champion in the Sun Belt in Marshall. And Marshall was forced to back out because they had been depleted by the transfer portal in December and that they couldn't play in a bowl game. My question to you is this, George. Do you give the American commissioner credit for coming out and saying something that I think everyone seems to think? And do you have a problem with the current transfer portal setup?
Kind of a twofold question. On one hand, I do think that the current setup of the transfer portal needs some tweaking, especially with the timing for football. For other sports like basketball, it doesn't seem to be nearly as rough with the schedule. But at this point, think about it. With college football, we start in August or September, and we're going until almost February. That's like 6 months. That takes up half your calendar anyway. Where else is there going to be a real transfer portal period other than just spring?
But I think it has to be in the spring.
But that only gives you like a week or two for players to actually transfer before spring practices and spring games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
and given the current setup too, like, I mean, it's almost like free agency, right? These players want to negotiate. They want to...
There has to be a window. There needs to be a full-length window. It can't just be, all right, guys, if you want to leave, you have 3 days, skedaddle. That's not really feasible right now. And especially with the new regulations coming in for it. Okay, so now you have to negotiate terms with a collective or a school. There's step one. Both sides have to accept. Then you have to go to NIL Go or whatever this clearinghouse is. It needs to be cleared. There's 4 steps. Oh, and then don't forget, you also have to enroll in classes in school. So there's 5-ish steps that are not exactly a quick process to transfer schools for these athletes.
Right. This was actually something, if we flip the conversation to basketball for a minute, this is something that John Calipari brought up on a podcast with John Rothstein.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, John Calipari, I know, very polarizing figure here in the city, but he made a few good points. I thought, you know, one point that struck me that I hadn't necessarily thought about in the past, but I do think matters, is he was suggesting essentially that players should be able to transfer one time.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be no limitations to that, but you shouldn't get to a program, redshirt, collect your check, and then just leave.
Leave.
Sure. And
which is fair. I don't hate that.
Somewhat, but based on the rules of the NCAA, you're not getting paid for performance on the court. You're getting paid for your name, image, and likeness. And so if you make money for being a redshirt and not playing in a single game, that's your right, you know? I think based on the current situation, I don't necessarily see a problem with that. But he wants players to be able to transfer one time. And one of the things that he brought up that I thought was a good point was that some of these players you'll see transfer 3-4 times. They'll collect a check at every single stop, and I don't even necessarily have a problem with it. But where it does create a problem is those players aren't always graduating from school, right?
Yeah.
They don't always have a future in playing professionally in their sport. And
more often than not, they don't. I mean, percentage.
Right, percentage. Right. What is the commercial? They used to run the commercial like 90,
it's only
whatever.
Like, yeah. Like only, you know, 2% of
are going pro.
And make sure
something
you get
other
your
than
degree.
Sports. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. They used to run those ads all the time. And then if they don't get a degree, then they go to get a job. They don't have a college degree. They just spent all that time collecting big money checks from all these different boosters and programs around the country. And they're looking at a job where they might make $60,000 or $70,000. And they're going, well, I'm not doing that, you know? And I think John Calipari makes a good point. I think that is probably true.
Yeah.
And so to me, I think that is, it is the problem facing college athletics right now. Obviously, they're trying to work things out. You know, I hope that leadership is eventually able to do it, but it's going to be a challenge to get so many major programs of all different levels, because let's not sit here and pretend like SEC football is the same sport as the Sun Belt, right? They're going to have different interests at heart as they try to, you know, bring players into their program. And, you know, the rich want to get richer. And those that are in a bad situation, for example, Marshall, who couldn't play their bowl game because they had too many transfers.
Yeah.
They're going to do anything that they can to try to avoid situations like that. So I'll ask you again. Do you give Pernetti any credit for coming out and saying this?
No, because he's not the first one to do it, and he's not the only one to do it. Plus, my big thing, now that I think about it, with that example, with the Marshall versus Army example, do you remember why all of those players transferred from Marshall? Their coach left. Their coach went to Southern Miss and took all of the players with him because he knew that they could win a Sun Belt.
Yep.
He was just getting his bag. So what I'm understanding, and this is, you know, a just as big issue with not even just college, but just, you know, sports and athletics as we all talk and you know, think about. Okay, cool. Coaches can do just about whatever they want. No problem because they are already professionals, right? But now we're paying college athletes like professionals.
They just need to find a way to cap this. There needs to be a cap. There needs to be a number. There needs to be a limit.
Yep.
And I think continuity is a good thing for college sports. I think we're all going to support our favorite college sports programs no matter what the setup is. That's what we've learned from this.
Absolutely.
But there just needs to be more direction. Minimal credit. Minimal credit for me because I think that you're right. So many people have come out and said this, but
so you're giving them like a D plus, C minus maybe?
C, yeah.
Since it is first day of school, we have to give it an actual grade.
Yeah, yeah. It is the first day of school. It is the first day of school. And it is obviously FedEx St. Jude Championship Week. So I will be out there, I think most days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week. If you see me, come say hello. I'd love to talk to you. I love to chat to all the people out there. And I'll be out there digging, looking for good stories from all the people coming in out of town. And I hope they all get to see the very best of Memphis. And let's give them that. All right, for Drew and for George, we're out of here. Jason and John coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, medical bills, or personal loans, help is here. More and more Americans turn to credit cards to get by. National Debt Relief is helping qualified clients reduce what they owe. For many, continuing to struggle making minimum monthly payments could take years to pay off. National Debt Relief has already helped over 550,000 Americans reduce their debt by negotiating directly with their creditors. When you call, you'll be amazed at how much you can save and how quickly you can become debt-free. If you want off the debt treadmill, visit NationalDebtRelief.com today. You don't need to declare bankruptcy, and you may qualify for significant debt relief. To find out what savings you may qualify for, simply visit NationalDebtRelief.com. That's NationalDebtRelief.com.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no, so my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, Dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to Plansmore, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.